हरिः प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Bottom 25. Sahajayana Buddhist abandoned ritualism and study of scriptures as useless, right? Because the whole point is it's all about the bob, it's all about the move. So that's the driving principle, you can say, behind the Sahajya concept. Right? They practice the yoga of sex in which they visualize consciousness as being composed of the unity of masculine and feminine principles. Sometimes called upaya and pragya are karuna and shunyata. So then here's the idea, everything is the masculine and feminine principle. But it's not that it's the combination of the physical elements of the masculine and feminine that makes it work. It's the understanding of the masculine and feminine principles and how they're working in the original state, right? Mm-hmm. So the original cause and the formal cause, that's which is means before the creation, mm-hmm. right? But then they look at the reflection of that as the material cause and the using a different term. No, means that you're doing the activity. Operative, yes, operative cause. So then that is the masculine and feminine. And so that means the physical is doing something with the physical and producing something physical. Does that make sense? So therefore they translate this understanding of Vedanta, which is given in second canto, of how seeing everything in connection with the Lord, and how everything, therefore, is the Lord and His energies. That masculine and feminine, they've somehow or another brought that down to the material platform and considered that's the spiritual. Right? Mm. So this is now where the mistake is. Now, because they don't care about scripture, and they don't care about rituals, therefore, then, with this consciousness, then the scripture is not important for, directing this. And then what activities you do is not also directed by scripture, so you can make up your own thing. Mm. Right? So then it's what you physically do here with the material energy, that is therefore the representative of the superior aspect of the Lord and His energies. You understand? This is then what is creating the Sahajya. So this will be your major form, yes.
How do they justify this? Or don't they?
It's good fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, in other words, it's just like any other materialistic viewpoint, is that you identify with it, and so therefore it's good. You like it, it's good. You know, that's why what the study in the Tattva Vivek, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, in the spiritual world, there's only one opinion as far as philosophy goes. You know, that Krishna is God, we're the servant, and serving Him and pleasing Him is the goal of life. So there isn't another opinion. But there's a difference in taste. There's variety of taste, but there's only one understanding of the philosophy. Does that make sense? Like that. But in the material world, because you're dealing with the modes of nature, then you're going to end up with all these different variety of things that they will consider that is therefore correct. And then, if you're practicing spiritual, you're going to identify all these things as spiritual. Does that make sense? So it's just a mistake. Is they've gotten something that has some reality, because nothing that anybody's doing that's functioning doesn't have some element of reality to it. Right? It has to have. Otherwise, how will it attract the soul? How will it work? The difficulty comes is that they're not seeing that it's not spiritual, right? Mm. It's only seeing the external. I mean, this goes back to the spiritual world, is that instead of seeing the external as opportunities to serve Krishna, we're seeing the external as opportunities to make ourselves happy. Right? So, in other words, the spiritual world is all about Krishna. And therefore, the externals are just varieties of ways to please Krishna. But since it's about ourselves, pleasing ourselves, then the externals means opportunities for ourselves. So, we overemphasize the externals. Does that make sense? Because as we see, what makes Vrindavan unique from Vaikuntha? There's less focus on externals, right? Mm. When we think of Vaikuntha, we think of opulence, right? Grandeur. But Vrindavan is way more, unlimitedly more opulent than Vaikuntha, just that there's no emphasis on it, so nobody really notices that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you have a family. Right, father is a famous race car driver. The mother does rallying. You know, the kids are enthusiasts and this and that. So all they have is cars that are good for this kind of thing. But amongst them, they're just cars. You understand? They're just cars. So therefore, this one's going, driving up to see grandmother. They're doing a long haul, so they'll use this car. And someone's going down to the store to buy some groceries, they'll use that car. But it's just a matter of the function of the car. You understand? But for other people, it's this car, and it's, that car, and... You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So you have... It means you have the hatchback Ferrari, right? So that's the one you're going to take down to do the groceries, because you can open the back, put the groceries in. Because if you take the Lamborghini, there's only two seats. Where are you going to put the groceries? Right? You know, they say 2 plus 2, but, it's not 2 plus 2. You know, if there's midgets and you iron them first, then you can fit them in the back, right? But otherwise, if not, then it's not. So groceries aren't going to fit, right? Does that make sense? So for them, they're just cars. But everyone, it's the Ferrari, this, that, that. So the point is in Vrindavan, it's all about Krishna. So it doesn't really matter the opulence. You know, that it's really nice first-class facilities doesn't matter. It means all that matters is that it's nice facility for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
Can we extend this into saying that generally... an overemphasis on externals or opulence means actually poverty of the soul?
It means there's something out of balance there. Because that's how then the materialism starts, is that you focus on the externals. And so they make you happy. So then that's where we get distracted and get absorbed in the material. Does that make sense? We get absorbed in the material because of that. So now when we bring it here, now it's all about the externals. Right? So the externals then, this external will make me happy, that external will make me happy, or this is nice, that's not nice. So depending upon that, that's what we're dealing with. Right? Now, the point is, everything's engaged in Krishna's service. Okay? Let's give an example. Everything should be engaged in Krishna's service. Okay? Now we take, now there'll be generally two general major viewpoints of this. Okay? Okay, so it's all engaged in Krishna's service. It's all Krishna, so it doesn't matter what we engage or anything like that as long as it's engaged, right? Yes, so therefore, we'll use all the Western, it doesn't matter, modern, this and that, and it's all cool. Okay? Now, then, if what's perceived as a problem, what's the counter?
Am I right?
No, no, no. I'm saying on this material platform, what's the counter? What will be the natural counter? Means what? Means that's what they're going to say to say it's okay.
My own opinion.
It's my own opinion, but then who's going to be the opposition? The conservatives, right? The pro-Vedic. They're going to come in, no, this is nonsense, you have to do like this and that. And that. But both of them miss the point. Connecting it to Krishna means it's a philosophy. Mm-hmm. It's not externals. So they've missed how to engage the externals in Krishna's service. Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So this is the problem. We've been so used to... What do you call it? Externals, that we only know how to deal with that, because the externals is the situation of which I will enjoy, rather than the externals are how we're going to do nice service for Krishna. Right? So we don't have to change technically the externals. We only have to change how we view them. You understand? But the point is it's not about the externals. We start with the externals because that's all we see. Mm. So therefore, with the neophyte, it's all about the externals. Mm. Right? Therefore, the dress, the this, the that, you know, and they say, no, no, but why that? Whereas, you know, we're beyond all that. Yes, means that by consciousness and by philosophy, yes, but whether we're actually situated there, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, you know, the first grader goes to school and then, you know, the teacher says, okay, now sit here and do the letters. No, but it's all about actually communicating and the feelings and all that. It's not about all these externals of all these letters and all that. You know, of course, you're going to get, you know, have a first grade teacher there with their mouth open. Like that, you know, who is this kid? But at the same time, does that mean they don't have to learn their ABCs? You understand? Mm. Just because the one is primary and the other secondary doesn't mean the secondary is not there. Mm. Right? So the mistake is, because it's only primary, we don't need secondary. In the other words, no, because you need the secondary, therefore we forget the primary. Mm. Right? Mm. So in other words, we've turned the whole thing into just the external. So that's just general materialism. So now they just have their own unique blend here, that they're looking at the externals and saying the externals are the spiritual element, right? Like everybody else. But here, they're using the philosophy of the masculine-feminine principle. but they're misapplying it into the material. So if we deal with masculine-feminine here, what does that mean? Right? Masculine-feminine is a united principle. Right? That means, quote unquote, the yoga of sex. You understand? That's what you're going to get. Does that make sense? So, all it is another element of that. Now, where does this come from? This is the important element, is that, one, it's Bengali, so the tantric element is there. So the tantras may get into these things. Even within yoga, it has to be tantric. It's not going to be your straight Patanjali yoga, because there you have to be celibate. Right? So it's going to be some tantric element. And the point is this is coming from the Buddhistic idea of masculine-feminine principle. You know, so you go back to that whole yin and yang kind of different thing. But it's at maximum it can get you to liberation. It's not about the transcendental, actually. Does that make sense? So it's not even coming from the Vedanta. So when the devotees deal with the masculine and feminine principle, that's you're taking that from the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore it has a different flavor. It's not coming from ignorance, it's coming from goodness. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of duties and doing everything properly. So you know, it, therefore, it has its underlying principle is not very good. So therefore, then, is that okay now? Yeah, therefore, later on, under the Sena kings, Vaishnavism became ascendant in Bengal, royal patronage having been won for it by the great Acharya Srila Jayadeva Goswami. Now the Buddhist Sahajiyas absorbed and perverted aspects of Vaishnava philosophy, right? Because Vaishnavism is the thing, and if it's not about scripture, right? Not about ritual, so therefore if the Vaishnavism is popular and you know, because if you hear about it, it's logical, so you just absorb that into what you're doing. Mm. Rather than connect what you're doing into Vaishnavism, you're connecting Vaishnavism into what you're doing. Right? And since you're dealing with this already bogus Buddhist philosophy, now they've just brought in the Vaishnav element, so therefore they're upaya and pragya. Then instead of just being the masculine and feminine principle in the Brahman platform, you bring it into personal as Radha and Krishna. But the application of it is still on the material platform. Does that make sense? So now it gets even worse, right? Better it's just Brahman, right? You know, now it gets worse. Does that make sense?
Huh? Now it gets personal.
Yes, now it gets personal. Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like modernism or what's happening.
No. It's a different thing. Sahaji is a different thing. It means we're talking about a very specific. What we were discussing before that, that was what devotees may do. Mm-hmm. But this one, this is not what devotees do. Like that. They renamed their upaya and pragya principles Radha, Krishna, and Radha, imagining Radha Krishna to represent the highest state of bliss attained by men and women on the Sahajiya path. Right? So they imagine themselves as Radha and Krishna. This is where it gets weird, right? After the Muslim invasion, the Sahajiyas were influenced by the Sufis. The word Sufi comes from the Arabian word Saf, which means sacred. The Sufis were a mystical Islamic order of mendicants whose goal was a state of inspiration they called fana, or oneness in love with Allah, okay, which they sought to attain through song and dance. Okay, so now you all have this whole Radha Krishna thing going on. So now you add in some song and dance, right? It's just getting better all the time, right? You know, like that. In the Arabic countries, the Sufis faced condemnation as heretics because some preached that through fana they had become Allah, right? So this is the problem. Rather than just you're experiencing that relationship with Allah through music, they have become Allah. So then they're you know, how you say, impersonal, it means impersonalist there, you know. You know, not that the religion itself's not impersonal, but, you know, there's the idea that you're separate from God, right? You, in this impersonalism, you and God are separate. So how this all works out, hey, nobody's really sure, but, you know. But in India, the Sufis flourished, not in the least because their ideas had much in common with Mayavadi philosophy, right? In other words, they're just Mayavadis who sing and dance, right? You know, instead of, you know, so much gyan. Right? So they have their philosophy, they have their ritual and everything like this. Now, so does that make sense? So they introduce this element. Now they're mendicants, right? But you know, of course you have to go in a pair of Radha and Krishna, right? But you renounce Radha and Krishna, right? You know. And that, and it's all about song and dance. So that's how you're going to experience that oneness. So therefore, you become Radha and Krishna through the song and dance. You understand? So this is actually how the Sahajiya works. Right? In other words, be more careful when you call somebody Sahajiya. Yes. No, not the Sahajiyas. They're not going to get it. That's what they call themselves, Sahajiyas. Sahajayana. So it's just the one from Sahajayana, because that'll be Buddhist, it's just Sahajiya. You just change the A to an I and hey.
Are many?
Yes. You ever bumped into the Nittai Gaurati Shams? So they're one group, yeah. Yes.
So the song and dance part, it doesn't come from imitating Krishna pastimes like the Rasalila, that's what I
mean, it doesn't mean it wasn't so important to them because they're Buddhists. Mm-hmm. So then they're adding in that philosophical. But because the Vaishnavism is there in the song and dance, so they brought it in not from the Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but from the Sufi. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the 16th century, the Samkirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu flooded the world with the sublime, perfect, and transcendental religion of pure love of Godhead. The Sahajiyas, who celebrated their mundane sex mysticism with song and dance, were nothing more than a perverted reflection of the Samkirtan movement, because it looks similar.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, this emphasis on the relationship of Radha and Krishna, the song and dance, not so much emphasis on ritual and knowledge, but on the practice. So it seems to fit very nicely. They were not accepted as genuine Vaishnavas by Mahaprabhu and his followers, as is evident in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. For instance, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 12:114, Lord Chaitanya refuses a gift of scented oil, explaining that those who might smell it on his head would think him a dhari sannyasi, a tantric sannyasi, meaning these ones, who keeps women for sense gratification. Right. So it means they'll think he's one of these Sahajiya walls, because they dress in saffron and this and that, you know. You never seen, you know, you have a Sahajiya guy and he's got his little thing with a little ektara, you know, this funny kind of rag on his head and that, and he's got his you know, saffron dressed lady with him, you know. They don't have, what they're carrying is all they have. So they're renounced, they're like mendicants, they've gotten the mendicant side. And it's all about singing and all things like that. And so that those aspects of the Sufi. And that it's a man and a woman, then that's coming from the Buddhist. Does that make sense? But it looks like Lord Chaitanya's stuff. So then, you know, they throw in that also. You know, they're very accommodating. You know, it's very popular. You know, it's like that. In Antya 2:120, the Lord calls such men's Markata Vairagis, monkey sannyasis. Right, because you know, example of monkey, he doesn't really have much as possession and clothes, right? He just lives in a tree, right? But there's a whole, you know, army of women there, you know. So it's does that make sense? So that's market vairagya. And as Srila Prabhupada relates in his purport to Antya Lila 2:143, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu banished Chota Haridas for the slight mistake of begging rice from Srimati Madhavi Devi. Quote, as an example for future Sahajiyas who might adopt the dress of renounced order to imitate Rupa Goswami and other bona fide sannyasis, but secretly have illicit connections with women. Right? So, because the Sahajiyas would claim that, yes, no, we're just doing like was done by Chota Haridas and like that. So therefore he made an example of that. Right? It means within the society, within the movement, naturally it's there, but it was more for those outside the movement who would make these. Does that make sense? Footnote 5. The false renunciates, okay, this is Chaitanya Shikshamrita. The false renunciates are divided into four classes. Monkey renunciates, false renunciates, unsteady renunciates, and imitative renunciates. Right? Quite a crew.
Yeah.
those with no sense of renunciation, but who take on the cloth of renunciate, traveling around and commit sinful actions through their uncontrolled senses, are called monkey renunciates. Right? There's no real, you know, it's not like the monkey feels I'm renounced. He just thinks he's just normal. Those who take up the dress of the Babaji so they can eat with the Vaishnavas during festivals, get funeral rites performed by the Vaishnavas when they pass away, and get donations from householders to enjoy food, ganja, and tobacco, are called false renunciates. And so they have a concept of renunciation, but they're taking it up just to make it a business out of it, right? Those who take up Babaji dress due to temporary inspiration from suffering, poverty, sickness, failure of marriage, and quarrel are called unsteady renunciates. So they actually take it up seemingly sincerely, but it's unsteady because it was just because of the problem. When the problem goes away, it's not necessary anymore. Their renunciation does not last. They very quickly become false renunciates. Right? So then from there, then they'll move into, because now they'll, you know, it's not a problem, then they'll turn into false renunciates. They'll continue that dress just to get the facility and make themselves a position. Those who, due to addiction to intoxicants, fail in married life and put on an act of devotion while intoxicated, or learn how to act as a devotee with false symptoms, or try to imitate the stage of bhava by mental, material emotions, are called imitative renunciates. Right? So in other words, because of the intoxication, the marriage falls apart. Right? Because the mind functions in goodness. Right? And intoxication is ignorance. Does that make sense? So, in the feminine principle, that it'll be the mind. So you need basically an environment of goodness, not of ignorance. Does that make sense? So therefore, someone who's too overly absorbed in intoxication can't make a marriage work. Right? It can't function that way. So when that happens, then it falls apart, so then they get into their so-called devotion and renunciation. But they don't change the position of being intoxicated. You know, they just are a little bit more renounced, that's all. You know, not trying to apply it within the household. Right? So then they may take up, you know, this, or they take up the devotees and learn the false symptoms. Because the other ones, you see, is they're just doing the social element. Right? In other words, the first three are the social element, that they just do the thing of the of the Vaishnavas, look like Vaishnavas and thereby get benefit. One is they thought sincerely, but then when the problems go away, they become false. Mm-hmm. Right? The false are doing it or just get benefit, material benefit, maintain themselves that way. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. And so this one is then you imitate not the social position of renunciation, but the emotional, the bhav and all that. Does that make sense? So these are just the positions. It's not that you can't mix and match here. You understand? You know, you can put it all together. You can do all four. You know, it's like, you know. So these are imitative. So they're either intoxicated and then looking like sannyasis, or they are, trying to take up the emotional elements of advanced devotees and thereby looking renounced, so they're not, yes.
It's different types of renunciation within the sannyas?
No, this is just four false renunciates. So sahajyas generally are the monkey, you know, the market vairagyas, the monkey renunciates. But they also tend to, you know, with the element of the Sufi element, then they throw in the last thing of the imitative renunciates also. So you get those two, right? When they're younger, it'll be probably that. As they get a little older and a little bit more worried about maintaining, then you can throw in the, you know, how do you say, the false renunciates. Right? Does that make sense? And the whole thing might have started by being unsteady renunciates. You know what I'm saying?
Like poisonous soup.
Basically. That's why we're studying this, so you avoid know what is proper soup and what is poisonous soup, yes. Okay. All these types of renunciates are low, sinful, and unbeneficial for the world. From Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita 5.2. In the 18th century, the great movement begun by Lord Chaitanya appeared to have become corrupted by the influence of the Jat Gosai and the Smartas, right, which we've already discussed. Right? So in other words, they're trying to maintain their position as gurus by just saying their position as Brahmins and coming in these particular families, as opposed to they actually have the qualifications. This sad state of affairs presented an opportunity for the Sahajiyas to expand their influence amongst the common people. Because before is that pure Vaishnavism is there, it's being preached, so people know the philosophy, so they can distinguish between what's a Sahaji and what's not. But when then the so-called gurus or leaders of the Vaishnav society are your Jat Gosai and Smartas, then you're not preaching the pure bhakti. Because it's not about pure bhakti, it's just about the social position, right? If that's the point, then here is imitation Vaishnavism for social position, in goodness, but it leaves the door open for imitative Vaishnavism, you know, in passion and ignorance. Right? Because the point is that's imitative Vaishnavism. Right? So, therefore, now the Sahajiyas could have amongst the common people, because they're not that sharp. You know, so if you say, you know, they don't have the capacity necessarily to sit down and study a lot and follow all the rituals like the Smartas and the Kas Goswamis. That's why they respect them, because they can do it. Right? But now here's a matter of something that they can do. Right? Okay, that's what the Kas Goswamis do, but here's something you can do. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So therefore, through your song and dance and all this, then you can become one with God. Right? So then the common person, okay, you know, they're not so smart. So, but if there's pure Vaishnavism, then they don't prosper. Because then people will hear what's the actual position. And then these first three groups can't prosper. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. The way they would preach, if so much is, how they preach, or just by everything?
It's mostly means... That means we'll see if there's more detail here given on the preaching. But basically, it's just by an association, and they're there, and they're so-called happy, and others can be happy like them also. So therefore... Does that make sense? Yeah.
Vedic hippies.
With a touch of Buddhism. Buddhist hippies. Okay. Yeah, they're basically hippies. I mean, there was this one, I'm not sure, was it in the book? There was this picture, or he just showed me. Sahib Tomas had this picture of a group, because they, every year they have their mela, these bowels. They get together at bowel, B-A-U-L, not O-W-E-L. Right? Yeah. Not a whole lot of difference.
No.
But, you know, like, you know, still spelling is important.
Would you call it the bowel movement?
Thing? Yes. Bowel movement. Yes. That would sum it up very appropriately. So, they, you know, with Jayadev Goswami has this festival, and so they go there, and so they all go on the, you know, everybody's there. It's like a big, basically like a big monster Woodstock, right? They all get up there, and you know, sing their songs and that. So they have their little, you know, the little ekpar thing is that, and you know, whatever they do. So he has this one picture, and they have long hair. They don't cut their hair. They generally tie it up, but naturally, in the ecstasy of playing, the hair comes open. It's one of the symptoms that hey, now it's happening. So you have this guy there. This picture, he's got this long hair, right? Because you tie it up, then it comes out wavy, right? You know, so he's got his hair's out. He's got his ektar. You know, you're trying to play like this, but, you know, you're getting down. He grabs the top of it, you know, and he's playing like this with his hair down, like that, right? Okay. Yeah, and then he switches over to next to that's another picture that he's picked from on stage at Woodstock. And you have all the guys around. It's almost exactly the same, you know, mood and the whole, you know, kind of thing like that. And so then, you know, his point was these guys, next life, become those guys. Fortunately, now they don't know the philosophy, right? You know, free love. That, yes.
Maharaj, this phenomenon of singing and dancing that came from the Sufis, is it due to that Mayavadis accused Lord Chaitanya of being sentimental?
Could be. But in any case, even there, it's that you have your devotional element. You always have the bhakti movement, you know. But in any case, you know, his point, their point is that if you know the philosophy, that's how, and renunciation, that's how you liberate yourself. And so since liberation is the point, they don't know about devotion to God as the goal. Right, they're just trying to get liberated. So they're just saying that's a sentimental way of going about it. So for them, direct is just know the philosophy, not know the philosophy and sing a dance. You could just know the philosophy. Right? So that it could come from any, depending upon them. You know. Okay. Okay, deviant sects like the Gauranga Nagari and Kartabhaja are mutations of the Prakriti Sahajya movement that became popular at this time. In the 19th century, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took great pains to distinguish the pure teachings of Lord Chaitanya from Prakriti Sahajya perversions. On this basis, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati openly denounced all who deviated even an inch from the Chaitanya Sampradaya. Quote, no compromise. Radha Krishna, avatars, yogis, everyone was enemy. Oh, Ramakrishna, not Radhakrishna. I was thinking, how is this sentence is not working out. Ramakrishna, avatars, yogis, everyone was enemy to Guru Maharaj. He never compromised. Srila Prabhupada in the letter of 2773. So the whole thing is then these others are just branches of those, because that has its own unique thing. But it also, even though they say no ritual, no this and that, they have their own philosophy, ritual, and everything like that. They have a whole hierarchy there. It's quite developed, you know, like that. It means if you don't follow real religion, you'll create your own. So here they've created their own. So then those that have another idea, since it's based on you don't need ritual and philosophy, like that, then you can say, oh, they're so ritualistic, and then again. Does that make sense? You know, yeah. Prakriti Sahajya doctrine, the call of Maya. The call of Krishna, the call of Maya. Srila Prabhupada said, Sahajya means taking things very easily, right? Because that's the name of Sahajya. Right. Well, this way. Sahajayana means the easy vehicle. Right, so the easy path. So what does that mean? The Vajrayana means the diamond vehicle. Okay. Oh, Vajra, okay. The diamond vehicle. Oh, Mahayana means the great vehicle.
Yeah.
And so what does Hinayana mean? The small vehicles. Okay, the great, the small, the diamond, and the easy. Okay. So there, Sahajya means taking things very easily. Right, so remember, as it goes back before, is that the Sahaj also has that you're taking it from the spiritual identity or is the material identity. So you're using material identity and then claiming that that's the spiritual identity. Right? So then from the origin of the word, then they're applying it from the material. Then they're dropping the shastras and the rituals, so that makes it easy. Mm. You understand? Mm. So it's easy materialism. Mm. Right? It is a generic term that applies not so much to any specific sect or apasampradaya, but indeed to all forms of deviation. From the characteristics of the Sahajya mentality shown below, it may be readily concluded that there is only one apasampradaya, the Prakriti Sahajya, with 12 sub-branches going under different names. Right, because in other words, you're taking that the material identity becomes the major aspect, right? So you're born as a smart, or you're born as a caste Goswami. You're taking the material aspect, right? There, it's like, you know, the Sahajya is open. Anybody who's born can be. You don't have to be. Does that make sense? You know, so that element then. In that way, you could take it that they're all Sahajya. So then we can say the general just deviation of Sahajya. But it's also good to know what's the specific. Yeah?
As you talked about the idea of Prabhupada,
that wasn't so that you get an idea and then go there.
Are they in any way connected to Sahajya, or is it just business, like musical business, like in the devotional?
Means you're talking inside or outside?
Yes.
Inside is just business. Outside it's the Sahajyas. Right? Because otherwise, how are they going to do that all the time? But you have to be very, very careful, because the point is it has to be a good show. Right? So that can give rise to the other. The imitative. But because the movement is based on pure devotion, the tendency is to purify everything so that we don't see those elements so much. Does that make sense? A Okay, quote. Such Sahajis are called Shakibeki, and sometimes they are called Gaura Nagari. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 8, 204, 205 purport. So it's just a matter of what they're adding to it. What's the uniqueness of the Sahajia? Right? Because even within the Sahajias, who they call themselves Sahajias, they also have their levels like that, yes.
But what would we say Jack Bustani's and smartest would be Sahajis, or what things?
On the basis meaning that you're going back to the original meaning of Sahajana, meaning that it's the what is your nature? Right? So you act according to your nature. So Mother Jashoda acts according to her nature, right? And so that nature is to serve Krishna. And in the material world, then you have someone here. So you say you have someone who is a parent here. So they're going to act according to that nature. But one is based on the spiritual relationship with Krishna, one's not. Right? So therefore, the nature that's there, that's what has to be connected to Krishna. So in the spiritual world, it always is. Here, you have to see that you do that. So that's your original, means in other words, all those things you have to connect back. So that's where the deviation is they think by connecting the material, that's all you need to do. So in other words, you're imitating the spiritual sahaj, right? And by performing the material, by its reflection is the material. And you think that's what's spiritual, rather than you're not imitating, you're following the footsteps. So, you know, Mother Jashoda does everything connected to Krishna, so therefore the parents here do everything in connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? But not that my kid is Krishna. You know? Like that. But my kid's also a devotee, and so everything's connected to Krishna, so then we see that it all is being done for Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? You know, so then everything, so you're dovetailing the conditioning, but there they're taking the conditioning and saying, no, that's spiritual. So the Jat Goswami, because I'm born in this family, automatically I'm an advanced devotee. So they're automatically guru. It's just a matter of growing up and knowing how to do it. Right? And then the smart is just because I'm born in it, I'm automatically a Brahmin. Right? So it's still, on that principle, is the same. Now they're following Shastra and all that. Now Sahaja is now taking a step further. So this is both, is that they drop. So when we say Sahaja meaning all of them, we mean Sahaja meaning from that philosophical, where it deviates philosophically. Then there's the specifics of their unique spiritual deviation. So in that way, you wouldn't compare Sahajas with the Jat Gosai, because the Jat Gosai follow the Gaudiya Vaishnava rules in that, basically. You know, some very strictly, some not so strictly. But the idea is that recommended lifestyle, you know, the smart is that recommended lifestyle by Shastra, they're living. Right? The philosophy they accept, except for the part about that they're, you know, because you're born in the family. That part they kind of finesse. But basically everything else, they know quite well the philosophy. Does that make sense? So, but here the Sahajis, then they don't know the philosophy, because it's not about knowing the philosophy. It's just that little bit of basic, and then so you just do these activities, and then you become, and sing, and then you become Radha and Krishna. Right? So then they're impersonalists in that way. You know? But from the sentimental side, while the other ones are more from the conservative side, yeah.
So we can say that
smartest
and
Jat
Goswami, they don't accept
Sahajis. No. No, not at all. Like
and
that.
And others, Sahajis, do they accept smartest and Jat Goswami?
Well, they'll think that they're ritualistic and all that, which is unnecessary. So they've got the real, that's the point, the Sahaj, the easy path. Why would you go through all that when you can just do this? Right? And then within that, then the ones that have branched off from there, the Sahajiyas may not accept the Sakibekis or the Gauranagaris. They'll think they're strange. you know what I'm saying? It's just like in, you have a general category, but then within that, you have something. Let's say like in the Veda, you have Jyotish. So it's a category, it's a book of knowledge. But within that, then you have the subdivisions of knowing the math. right? Then knowing how to establish where the planets are. So that's the Jyotish. Then for interpretive sciences. The whole thing is Jyotish, but within that then there's a specific Jyotish. Because it's overall is dealing with math and movement. So that makes it Jyotish, right? So it's applied to planets. So here is the overall, the sahaja means is that the nature is the foundation, but it's not the spiritual, it's the material. So that way all the apasampradayas are sahaja. Right? But in specifics, when you go into it, then there's the group called sahajiyas that they don't necessarily appreciate others, and others don't necessarily appreciate them. Is that something? Yes.
With regards to her question about kirtan, I heard one very strict kirtani in our movement say that under no circumstances should devotees charge any kind of money for performing kirtan.
So means technically any skill that you do, unless it's an occupation, it means your bona fide occupation, you can't charge for. Means you can charge, but I can't remember the beginning of the sentence, which is, So in other words, anything from ashram you can't charge for, right? And since the brahminical activities are ashram activities, that's their occupation, you can't charge for it. So either they have to make it very clear, we're musicians, and we can, and we're, dovetailing our musicianship in Krishna's service, so we chant Hare Krishna, right? So therefore, you can hire us to come, and because we're good, and we know how to get the crowd going, and that, so therefore, will benefit your festival by improving, focus on the kirtan, and we charge this much. That works because it's a business of musicians. Mm-hmm. But then the problem comes is if you're musicians as a business, what varna does that make you?
Shudras,
okay. And technically shudras shouldn't be doing things on their own, but they can do skilled trades as long as it's beneficial to the higher three classes. So in this case, then kirtan, in that case, can be beneficial. Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's say, okay, you're having a Ratha Yatra and you have a band, a popular band, and they're inclined towards the devotees or like that, and says, well, we can come play at your gig, but because we have other things, and if you pay us something, then that will work for us, and then we might do that. But if they know they're a band and that they charge like that, so it's understanding they're a band. But within Krishna consciousness, then you think, well, it should be for free, and it should be, but we're not shudras, we're devotees, and I understand like that. So basically, who's going to present it like that? Mm-hmm. if it's presented as, we're devotees, we do kirtan, like that, and so we like kirtan, we go, so we can also, help here. Then it's a matter of, but since we're that, we don't do something else to maintain ourselves, so if you can, do something to take care, then that's nice. And whatever they take care, then that's what you get.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So some places will give you more, some places less. Mm-hmm. So then if you like that, that's brahminical, then you can do it. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing a brahminical activity and charging for it, mm-hmm. then you'll lose your ability. Mm-hmm. That's why you so much time see there's some, astrologer or some guy like this, and then devotees go and they're very impressed, and then everybody else starts going, and then after some years nobody goes to him anymore. Why? Because he loses his potency, because he charges. Mm-hmm. Specifically, it's when he sees the Western, he charges more. Mm-hmm. I have been to Ayurvedic doctors, and they're quite good. It's like one guy, he's like 90 years old, at least late 80s, but I think he was 90s, like that, and then you can say, here's a, Dr. Heal Thyself who actually did it, right? So he's 90 years old, still sitting and practicing. And he didn't charge, just whatever he wanted to give. So you'd have to ask the other people there, what do you normally give? And they say, oh, like this and that. And so then you give that much. He wouldn't charge. Mm-hmm. Right. And so they just don't lose their potency. Mm-hmm. Understand? So that's the problem is, when you make a business out of the brahminical things, it's one thing if the temple's doing it, mm-hmm. because then all the proceeds go to directly to the temple. But then the person who did it for the temple, then when he goes out on his own and does it, then that's why you never hear about them for very long. You know, it's not that they're from a Jyotish family, so therefore just by habit, and they'll just carry on doing that, they become a nobody and a few old grandmothers go to them, is that they weren't like that in the first place.
Yeah.
So therefore, they're doing this as an overlaid culture. Mm-hmm. And so then when they lose that potency, then you don't see them doing that stuff anymore. That's why you see that these things, it's hard to get them established, because why would you do something that doesn't make money? Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And if it's brahminical, why do we have to pay money? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you put these two together and, you know, brahminical culture is, sidelined, yes.
In regards to what you just said, then, for example, if one goes in book distribution, then how does one draw the line between trying to then encourage the person to give a bigger donation as opposed to then not?
The point is it's a matter of why are they giving a donation? Why do you want them to give a donation? If you want it so you get more money, then you have a problem to work with. If it's a matter of they get more benefit, then what's the nice? But the point is they should give a bigger donation and be happy about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, even the slow should know what he's doing, getting himself into it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Krishna.
Yes.
So the sahajas, they don't do the discrimination between material and the spiritual.
Not really.
And,
they consider what they're doing material is spiritual.
This is not easy also for you need. Sometimes I think it's very difficult for because you are submerged with material.
Yes.
You are inside.
Yes.
And it's very difficult for.
No, but you have pure devotional service and a pure association to compare it with. Therefore, you're able to maintain that discrimination. Even if it doesn't come easy, still by association it will come. That's the importance of association of Vaishnavas. Right? That's why Rupa Goswami recommends you associate with those more advanced so that you can make that discrimination. You see the example. But for the sahajiyas, they just associate with sahajiyas. So then, you know, where's the example? Yes?
So Maharaj, in this Prakita Sahajiya, there is some mention about Tantra.
Tantra, yeah. I mean, that goes back to that Buddhistic element.
But what is Tantra?
In this case, Tantra will mean it's coming from the Shakta or Shaiva Tantra. Just generally, when you say Tantra, Tantra simply means ritual. Which is interesting for a group that doesn't believe in ritual. But Tantra specifically means ritual. So you have mantra, tantra. So the mantra is the shloka you use. The tantra is the ritual you use. Let's say you're offering boga to the deity. Right? So the mantra is, you know, prayers to the spiritual master, to Lord Chaitanya, and to Krishna. The tantra is, you know, cleaning the place, putting the plate, you know, ringing the bell, bowing down, doing those things, chanting Gayatri. That's the tantra. You understand? So that's the generic word of tantra. But generally when you say tantra just on its own, you know, unless you say sattvic tantras or sattvata tantras or Vaishnav tantra, generally tantra means that it'll be shakta or shaiva. So it means the rituals that are practiced by the Shaktas and the Shaivites. So within that, you do have a branch. It's not your main branch. You do have a branch where they'll use the sexual elements as ritual. But the point is when they do that, it's all things. Like the Agora, they live. So sex is not just, you know, it means that it's also dead bodies, it's dogs, it's anything. So the whole point is the idea is that you're not connected with anything here, so you're learning that renunciation, right? But the problem is when one's involved in these things, it's easy to feel you're renounced, you know? But if you're not involved in these things, that's when you notice whether you are renounced. But at least there, they have the mentality that I'm renounced, and they identify with I'm renounced. So that at least there's that respect for the element of renunciation, though they're so materially absorbed. It's quite funky. like that. Does that make sense? So somehow or another, that aspect of this, you know, in the Bengali form, then is what has gotten into this, that, you know, then perverted these Vajrayana Sahajayanas, right? So they're using those elements, but it appears that they've dropped the more, you know, general just detachment from the material world and just in keeping the element of the sexual aspect. You understand? Does that make sense? So that's what's then come into the Sahaja. Does that make sense? So you have two aspects. This aspect, which is not much talked about, because that's more unseen. What's seen when you bump into sahajas is that imitative aspect of trying to imitate the bhav and emotions of an advanced Vaishnava. You know, so they'll be doing kirtan and they'll be crying and rolling on the ground and making all kinds of, you know, sounds. And, you know, you say, and so then Mahaprabhu, oh, you know, all that kind of jazz. Yeah, yes.
So sometimes in the temple scene, some ladies that come just start rolling around on the floor.
That's one. That's one of them. Yeah. So either you move out of the way, or you know, or you tell them that this is not what we do. Because otherwise they'll bump into you. You know. So you don't have to. So if it's ladies, we leave them alone. So and if it's men, we generally tell them. You know, do
tell them to stand up.
Yeah. So then the security can take care of them. But when there was no security, then we'd have to tell them. But generally, the ladies you ignore. Because they don't make as much of a scene about it. The men, they really make a scene. They're rolling on the ground. Oh, it's a scene. It's a whole drama. So you want to move them.
I think someone once asked Prabhupada, but how do we know if he's genuine or not? Maybe he's really having ecstatic symptoms. Prabhupada said, kick him. If he doesn't notice, then he's real. If he gets upset, then he's making
Yeah. In other words, Prabhupada's saying they're all bogus.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah, no, because they do. Oh, what's this? Oh, right. You know, they get really upset when you get them up and tell them, don't do this. No, but you know, our devotion, why are you getting in the way of our expression and all that kind of stuff like that.
Do they have their own temples? They can express
it. means you have a variety of them, because basically, as you say, they're all kind of in that line. So, you know, your Nittai Gaurati Shams, they got hundreds of temples. All the major, you know, Gaudiya temples are controlled by them. Like Haridas Thakur Samadhi in Puri, they control that. You go there. So many places around. So many places you go, they control it. Somehow or another, they got control. But they're kind of they're not coming originally from that line, so they're more the imitative in that they imitate that they're advanced. They don't get into the sahajya, all this other grungy stuff. Like that. Generally, the sahajyas are more on the road. Or, you know, people that are just grihasthas and stuff like that, and then they come and take part. So how organized it is a movement, I'm not exactly sure. But your Nittai Gaurati Shyam are. But they'll be more the imitative aspect rather than, you know, there's less of that Buddhistic mix. But the element of sahaj, that it's easy, and it's, you don't worry about shastra and rituals so much, and it's all about bhav, and you imitate the advanced that elements. Does that make sense? So that's why we're saying is that you have this basic core kind of principle, and then from there that you're taking the material as spiritual and not really worrying about the shastra and the ritual, and then you have varying degrees of what combination you get all your variety. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I was just imagining because they have all the choreography in the temple, the dancing.
Uh-huh.
So
the choreography. Well, they have their melas. Generally, sahajas have melas, so they always get together for some kind of thing like that. But whenever you see, sometimes there's these akandanams and they invite groups. Many times they are namhatas, so now they're proper devotees. But the style of presentation is still from the sahaja, you know. like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, but also how, you know, they do the kirtan and how they get, you know, they have the ways of getting enthusiastic and all that. I think it means if you ever really, you know, that means here it means after Gaur Purnima for 5 days, you get the benefit of hearing them nonstop, 24 hours, like that. So if you ever... Huh? Some of them started, but that time, that's the pancham dole, and that you really get your full dose. You know, okay? This is just, you know, some enthusiasts, but that's like the real. So that's one of the times when they all get together.
We can go on a field trip.
Yes, you can go on a field trip. You know, look at it, oh, it's this and that. Yeah, you know, you can say, hey, this and that, and everybody's, you know, got all their. Yeah, it would be good, right? You have some lady very confidently talking about them, you know, walks over and, you know, points out like the Shaki Baki, you know, here, and then see, they, you know, the pearl in the nose and all that, and, you know, like that, and notice the little bit of stubble like that, you know, so it's like that, and, you know, it's like that, and the guy's like, you know, and tell them smile, and they all take pictures.
It's like Gaur Purnima after party, you know, real hardcore. Stop 5 days. You know.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
After the disco, you have it, you know.
The after party, yeah. Yeah. Some of these are maybe the after party. Yeah. It's like time for breakfast. Okay. Okay, so then, yeah, we'll stop. Yeah. Okay, because next, now we'll get into the philosophy. Mm-hmm. Oh, it goes for a little while. I'm actually impressed that there's a little more. I thought it was just, you know, this little bit from here to here, and that's the philosophy. So today's what?
Friday.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Tanitai Gaura ki. Okay, no, we'll get 2 days. We'll get Monday. This Gaur Purnima is on Wednesday. I'm not sure. Do we know what happened to the day after? Yeah, I kind of remember the day after we don't really start after that, so we'll start on Friday.